Yes, I'm Sarah Bibaut. I'm a soil scientist at the International Rice Research Institute. And right now, the large part of my soil chemistry research is funded by Harvest Plus, which will sound funny to a room full of breeders. In the 13 years I've been involved in the Tri-Societies, I have never once even thought of presenting a paper in any CSSA division. It's always been ASA or SSSA, and I've only attended two or three of them in 13 years. So this has been a very interesting and fun experience for me to participate in this today. I'm not going to go into very much of the biofortification background, but I will mention zinc since it hasn't been discussed in very much detail yet this morning. Zinc deficiency in humans, somewhat similar to the vitamin A deficiency that was mentioned earlier, impairs immune system function, and it making especially children more vulnerable to the common causes of child health problems in developing countries, such as diarrhea and pulmonary diseases, as well as slowing cognitive development. So, and here is an analysis of the zinc deficiency among children under age 5 by region, and South Asia has estimated prevalence of 80% children who are zinc deficient. And so that is why current Harvest Plus focus for zinc deficiency, especially for zinc biofortification in rice, is focused on South Asia, because that population also consumes a lot of rice. And as this group knows well, biofortification is only one approach to improving human nutrition. It should be complementary to others, not in competition with them. The intermediate Harvest Plus goal is to increase the amount of zinc from 20 to 30 parts per million in brown rice. Brown rice means rice that has only had the seed coat removed, but that still has most of the alurone layer present, as opposed to white rice, which has been polished to the point of not having the alurone layer present anymore. So in iron, the difference between, for iron biofortification, the difference between brown and white rice is very important, because you lose most of the iron in the polishing process. For zinc, that's not as much of an issue. We lose pretty consistently about 20% of iron during polishing, so 80% is retained in the endosperm. It's much easier when we're comparing across methods to talk about brown rice and to measure brown rice, because the degree of polishing of white rice has a big impact. And so in order to minimize that issue, all of the data I'm going to present is specifically on brown rice, even though most people do eat white rice. So we're trying, the goal here is to try to raise the brown rice zinc by about 50%. I'm involved in Harvest Plus, which has been mentioned in a number of the other presentations this morning. The little logo here says that it's a program for breeding crops for better nutrition. And for the most part, it is still very much a plant breeding approach. I got into it in the second phase of the Harvest Plus project to help explain puzzling G by E interactions that were observed specifically with zinc in rice. So I credit one of my colleagues and friends, Sally Brooks, to pointing out that traditionally plant breeders and soil scientists are divided by their common language. G by E interactions are something that it has become apparent to me in the last couple of years. Both of those terms, G and E, meant very different things to the two disciplines. From my perspective as a soil scientist, my goal is always to optimize environmental conditions so that any genotype will grow well there. And for my plant breeder friends, they want to produce genotypes that will grow well in any environmental condition. So the way this plays itself out in the way we design experiments is that I design an experiment to test all sorts of specifics about the environment. And as an afterthought, I say, can you give me some seed? I don't care what variety. And my plant breeding friends tend to do exactly the opposite, in that they are very interested in all of the different lines and the genetic differences between them. But the afterthought is, what kind of soil should we test it in? So I got into this interest in zinc and rice from zinc is a common nutrient deficiency in rice growing areas in the soil. And one of the things that we observed early on was that the traditional way of fertilizing soil with zinc in order to grow the plant well in the early growth stages was not very effective. It ended up being very inefficient, and that's because of, I'm not going to go into the details of the soil chemistry in this presentation, but the available soil zinc has nothing to do with total soil zinc, but the amount that's plant available decreases dramatically within a few days of flooding, and most rice is grown in flooded soils. If you take the soil, so if you measure the soil, the zinc availability in the soil sample when the soil is at a low redox potential after flooding, you get a completely different result than if you measure it in an air-dried soil. And almost all soil tests are done, routine tests are done on air-dried soils. The other thing is that if you add zinc fertilizer, it often rapidly becomes unavailable after flooding. So my research strategy in interacting with plant breeders in Harvest Plus has been, initially we did some greenhouse experiments that were proof of concept that zinc fertilizer, the timing of zinc fertilizer and water management would affect grain zinc. So I used two genotypes, both given to me by my biofortification breeder colleagues, both high grain zinc varieties, and various levels of zinc fertilization and carefully controlled water management with redox potential to test what effect that would have on grain zinc content. Then the second part here was to take all of their replicated yield trials, which at that point was the 21 elite ones that have been come through the breeding program, and test the way that the what I think was an unintentional bias in the way the plant breeding experiments were designed, and I'll explain that more in a moment. So objectives from my perspective as a soil scientist have been to optimize soil management to achieve high grain zinc through appropriate zinc fertilizer input and appropriate water management. And our hypotheses are that rice plants take up more zinc when the soil zinc is more available, and that high grain zinc genotypes may take up extra zinc either early or late in their growth stage. What I mean more explicitly here is that the highest zinc availability in soil is when it's non-flooded and has zinc fertilizer added. And the genotypes may be vary in their response to different timing of high zinc availability. So in the greenhouse experiments that we did several different combinations of zinc fertilizer timing and 1 week drainage periods. So sometimes we did the drainage period, and a drainage period does not mean we're drought stressing the plant at all. It's simply less reduced soil conditions, less chemically reduced, more oxidized. And we would add the zinc fertilizer either at the beginning of that drainage period or at the end, or sometimes several months or before or after the drainage period. And that was only done on two high grain zinc genotypes. And then in the field testing, we took one of the plant breeding trials at Erie and tested the elite lines had quite different maturity differences. So some of the shortest maturing varieties were about 90 days, and the longest ones are 130 to 140. So dramatic differences in maturity, and they were all being screened, understandably, in the same plot. But the water management then could not be uniform across all of these different genotypes. And we also tested some genotypes there that were not in the biofortification program. So here are some results from our greenhouse experiments. This is one of Harvest Plus's elite zinc biofortification lines. And this was a comforting result to my plant breeding friends. Basically, it shows that we had reached the target level of 30 ppm with this genotype under all the environmental conditions that we tested in our experiment. But also from the soil scientist perspective, interesting that we were able to increase it from 31 up to 37 parts per million by adding zinc during a late season drainage period. So this, I'm not going to go into all the details of this experiment, but basically these treatments were different timings of zinc fertilizer addition and different timings of drainage. We tried a similar experiment with a slightly different design with the same genotype that I mentioned in the previous slide, and another one from the zinc biofortification program. And this was kind of revelation to me as a soil scientist that the two didn't behave the same. You can see that this we got the same results the second time that we got the first time with IR69428, and that is that we were able to increase the amount of zinc by adding zinc late in the season. With IR68144, we didn't. So now to move on to the field experiment part of our work. The question was, is there a bias towards late maturing genotypes because of artificial redox effects? And the replicated yield trial design with genotypes of differing maturity results in systematic differences in water management, which is that because they're all planted in the same field, the genotypes that mature at 90 days are still, they're actually being harvested in standing flood water, which is almost never true in a farmer's field. And the genotypes that mature much later undergo the typical, what we call a terminal drainage process, which is what most farmers do, which is they allow the water to drain out of the field 2 to 3 weeks before harvest, primarily just to make it easier to get in and harvest the crop. So our observations that zinc availability in soil decreases dramatically when the soil is flooded, and our observations that some of the genotypes we tested were taking up zinc from the roots during grain filling rather than remobilizing it from the leaves, those indicated that this is potentially a serious bias that's happening in the plant breeding trials. And so we had this particular experiment, field experiment, has not been designed to test this. So this is just, you could say that these are confounded experimental results, but they suggested that what we have down here at the bottom was that the genotypes that were tested in this trial listed in order by flowering date and the soil zinc availability during those flowering dates. And so roughly speaking, there is a correlation there between the genotypes that happen to mature when the soil zinc availability was higher, having higher grain zinc. There's all kinds of other factors that could be involved there in terms of plant physiology. So basically the study that we did here, the result of that was that we came up with experimental designs in this year's cropping season to test more specifically whether that difference had primarily to do with plant maturity length and the fact that if a plant is growing longer in the field, it has more time to take up zinc, or if it had to do with this water management artifact. And don't have those results analyzed yet, unfortunately. But this has, going back a bit again to the difference between breeders and soil scientists' research strategies, the breeders I've talked to in Harvest Plus within the rice program are testing their elite genotypes in multiple environments, and sometimes with and without zinc fertilizer, or in two environments close by, one known to be zinc deficient and one known to be zinc sufficient. And I was in a Harvest Plus presentation in Singapore at the end of last year and talking to one of my collaborators, Dr. Untung Susanto in Indonesia, the Indonesian Institute of Rice Research. And he had very diligently, across his 12 sites, which are across Indonesia, collected soil samples and had them submitted to their soil analysis lab and measured every parameter offered by the soil analysis lab, then presented at this meeting that there were no correlations whatsoever between what the expression of high grain zinc and any of these soil parameters. And I looked at the list of soil parameters and said, oh, that's obvious because I don't have any theoretical reason why those particular things that you measured would have anything to do with grain zinc. And then, of course, the discussion was, well, then tell me what I should measure. And so this was an explanation of why the environmental effects seemed to be so puzzling in terms of the G by E experiments. And that's flooding the soil changes everything. The pH tends to go towards neutral, whether it starts out low or high. Iron availability increases dramatically, and zinc availability usually decreases, although there are a few cases in which it increases. But those changes are only temporary. So the basic problem that was happening with what Untung was doing was that, of course, he collected the soil samples and air dried them and ground them and submitted them to the lab, which is what labs always require. And therefore, he didn't see any of the expected correlations. So here's, this is a typical, I mean, there's no, you can't submit samples, fresh samples, to a service lab to do them. Basically, we only have, because service labs can't process fresh samples very well. It's not a practical suggestion, so I'm not suggesting that. It's helpful, so the soil scientist's role in this is to try to understand what would be more useful then, because I know that that's impractical. So what we've now been doing is we're in the process of actually collaboratively designing a G by E experiment with the plant breeders at Erie. And the breeders are choosing the genotypes that they expect to contrast in their G by E interactions. So some that have been remarkably robust across multiple multiple environments so far, and some that have been quite variable. We, from our part, are choosing sites within each of the three countries. The three countries are Bangladesh, Indonesia, and the Philippines. We're making sure that the sites that are chosen for these multi-location trials represent all of the categories of zinc deficiency that we've identified, or zinc availability. And together, the plant breeders and I are working on identifying a minimum environmental data set to be collected. So I have all of these ideas about theoretically what kinds of factors in the soil might be important. And I show it to my plant breeder friends and they say, no, we can't possibly collect that data in a practical way. Or yes, we can. So we've gone back and forth like that. And we're just starting, we'll begin this experiment, this larger scale G by E experiment in this coming dry season, which in all three of the countries starts in December and January this year. And this collaboration has also reframed the way I think about how my soil chemistry research products can be used. And one way is to help come up with a decision tool for breeders who don't want and can't practically analyze flooded soils. So here is an example. I've done this several different times, and it still needs to be refined for different breeding objectives. But in this case of zinc biofortification breeding, is the soil submerged more than 80% of the growing season? So in some cases in rice, it is, because that's typically the most favorable environment. In other cases, either because they're breeding for drought tolerance or in a rain-fed environment instead of an irrigated environment, sometimes that's not true. So if it is true, then we have the need, then zinc deficiency is likely. We have the need to adjust for the maturity differences and apply zinc at flowering, because that is what we have observed is usually the best way to get a response in terms of the grain zinc, response to zinc fertilization. If the soil is not submerged, we ask then, is it calcareous? Does it have free calcium carbonate content? If yes, then we found that it's more effective to apply zinc at the mid-tillering stage. If no, then is it known to be in a zinc deficient area? And this is the trickiest question for a plant breeder to answer. And so we're still working on how to best identify that. And if yes, then it's important to add zinc at the beginning of the season. And if no, you probably don't need to apply zinc at all. And from the breeder's perspective, we've been talking about the possibility. So I keep saying, okay, if I can identify for sure which environmental factors are most important for this, the expression of high grain zinc, what are you going to do with this information? And so my understanding is that usually breeders are looking for robust genotypes that will express these genes across multiple environments, but that would also be possible to target specific genotypes for specific environments if necessary. So for example, you could target a genotype that's known to acidify the root zone during grain filling. You could target that for a calcareous soil region. And so we also have brought plant physiologists into this research recently to look at some of the physiological mechanisms of zinc uptake. So the conclusions are fairly obvious here, but from my perspective, plant breeding is critical for reaching the human nutrition target. I didn't show the data, but at one point I was doing these experiments with the non-zinc biofortified genotypes, and I did get management differences with my zinc fertilization and water management, but they raised the zinc grain zinc content from like 20 to 22 or 23 parts per million, whereas when we started using the biofortified genotypes, it was up to 30. So that was a very clear, in my mind, that we needed the biofortified genotypes. But that soil management can also help elite genotypes reach their full potential, and that this collaboration between the way soil is managed, not only from the farmer's perspective, but during the breeding experiments themselves, that can have an impact on how quickly progress is made in the biofortification objective. So I'd like to acknowledge colleagues funding from Harvest Plus and colleagues at URI, the others were listed as co-authors, and our technical support staff. Yes.
Thank you. Wonderful presentation. I really thank Linda and Paul for inviting you to this session. I think this is great to have this other component of the whole perspective here, and obviously, especially for the minerals, the soil environment and that soil interaction is so critical. Could you explain again, you talked a bit about that there were genotypic differences in zinc uptake during grain fill. We know from actually a lot of other studies in rice and wheat that, and other systems as well, that zinc uptake during grain fill is really a very critical period for supplying the plant with enough zinc to then remobilize or pass through on into the grains. Did I understand that you said there were differences in total uptake of zinc during between some of the genotypes, or were you just basing that on what was actually getting to the grain fraction?
What we did was, what my part of the research has done was testing this wide variety of genotypes from different genetic backgrounds and observing that according to mass balance calculations, we analyzed the zinc in every plant part at multiple stages. According to mass balance calculations, we have evidence that some of the genotypes do actually lose some zinc from the leaves during the grain filling stage, and it could be remobilized to the grain. And other genotypes show almost no remobilization of zinc at all from the leaves, and it seems to all of the zinc that gets in the grain seems to come up through the stem during grain filling. So that's the basis of my statement on that. My other colleagues in Harvest Plus, some physiologists both in Japan and in China, have shown more directly with physiological experiments and with labeled zinc, radiolabeled zinc, that a lot of the zinc that gets into the grain during grain filling does come up through the roots. But then there's still some debate about how genotype specific that is.
Well, and you're looking at zinc content in the leaves, and so you're seeing no net change there. I know some of the isotopic work maybe suggests that the zinc isn't going out into the source leaves.
Right.
I'll argue about that. But
right. Yeah, there's the isotopic work still. Some of it suggests one, and some of it suggests the other, basically. Yes.
Very nice talk.
Thank you.
This reminds me of another story I heard recently. I can't quite place the, but it was this fellow who's in ionomics, studies ionomics plans at USDA in St. Louis.
Ivan Baxter.
Yes, and he told me the story about how some studies of iron, somebody identified a high iron genotype, and it turned out to be an artifact. It was the way they prepared the soil.
Yep.
That was the phosphate. Do you know? Phyllis, and I remember the case that I guess when they used phosphate fertilizer, it freed up more iron. What was the artifact then?
I don't know the artifact, but I do know Ivan.
So they had published high iron, and it turned out to be an artifact of how this pot culture, how the soil was prepared. I think it had to do with phosphate. So, very good.
Yes.
Is zinc fertilization of the rice crop that variable stages or specified stages going to be a practical option for rice farmers?
That's kind of a loaded question. Yes, farmers do it already to some extent because zinc deficiency hinders yield, grain yield. We don't anticipate that farmers would ever add, because zinc fertilizer is expensive, we don't anticipate they would ever add it for the purpose of increasing the grain zinc content. And so there are what our research shows is that that there are cases in which adding zinc fertilizer will increase the grain content, even if it has no effect on the yield. So, but that's not expected to be a practical approach for farmers. And the other half of my research is about helping farmers figure out how to use zinc more efficiently just for agronomic yield purposes. So most of the current recommendations right now are very inefficient in terms of how zinc is used. So we're trying to improve upon those, and hopefully, yes, we will find something that's better. Yes.
I had a question in management in soils that your background is in. In some cultures, I understand they burn the rice straw, and I'm wondering what effect would that have on zinc availability, if any, and maybe a way of circumventing having to fortify the straw.
Right, so the question is whether or not burning rice straw has effect on zinc availability. The zinc is not volatilized very much in burning, so most of the zinc, some nutrients are lost into the air through burning. Zinc is not one of those. There's not a lot of, but it doesn't have a, the short answer to the question is it doesn't have a big effect one or the other. The reasons for that is there's just not a lot of zinc in rice straw to relative to what's in the soil and how it's available in the soil. And the other question is that, or the other aspect is if you're considering the alternative of residue incorporation, then the residue incorporation has a different effect, which is causing the redox potential to decrease faster, which makes zinc less available. So it depends on whether you're talking about burning compared to residue incorporation or residue removal. But basically, it's not a big player in this particular issue.
So I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, but these robust high iron, high zinc rice lines, is there any good data on yield for these lines? Are you familiar with this? Or
you're asking me if there's...
Are they high yielders as well?
Right. My plant breeding friends just explained to me a few weeks ago that they would never even consider one that wasn't high yielding, so they say yes. But to the other part of your question, is do they actually exist, very robust high zinc genotypes in rice? And I'm not yet convinced that they do.
Okay, well, that's an even better question that you've already answered. Explain further. Why do you say that? You haven't seen that yet?
So far, the reason I was brought into Harvest Plus at Erie was because it's been very puzzling to the breeders why certain genotypes seem to be robust across a few environments, but then they'll fail in one environment. So far, I haven't seen data indicating that we've really overcome that problem yet.
Really?
I think that if we could understand the mechanisms by which the physiological mechanisms by which certain plants modify their environments to take up more zinc, that we could then breed those mechanisms, multiple mechanisms for different soil types into the same varieties.
So the short answer, as you said before, to the question is that they don't have a robust high zinc rice line yet?
Not yet.
No evidence yet?
Yes, not yet.
Thanks for your presentation. And I'm a plant breeder too, and I'm always talking with my colleagues that we should bring more soil scientists into these type of discussions, because plants don't synthesize these things; they're just uptaking these from their environment. So I think it's really important. I'm not sure if you mentioned this, but I see the same reaction of less zinc uptake in flooding conditions and dry beans. I don't know if you said it, but adding zinc in flooded conditions was helping to improve the zinc efficiency or not?
Not usually, but it depends on how flooded it is. So in rice, I don't think you probably, in bean production, flood it for very long amounts of time.
Beans don't stand water.
Right. Then it will probably almost always be helpful to add zinc. In rice, because it's sometimes flooded for months at a time, sometimes adding zinc has no effect. And one question about if I would encourage all of the breeders here to involve soil scientists more in your decisions about how to approach G by E mechanisms and interactions, but be forewarned that most soil scientists understand almost nothing about breeding. So you'll have to help us there.
But you've already been broken in.
Yeah.
You know that epigenetics now.
Right.
Yeah, you're C9 member, right?
Yeah.
I may be naive on how they do their breeding, but can you not ask your breeders to simply hold the water so that those that are late are not exposed to aerated soil, so that they also get harvested in standing water and you can eliminate?
We could, and that's the simplest way to take care of it, but also the least realistic, because farmers never grow rice that way. They never keep it flooded all the way to the end of, all the way to harvest. And so the, I guess what we would be doing if we did that is we would be biasing, equally biasing all of the genotypes negatively, which the, mostly the breeders want them all to be optimized, right? Not all negatively biased.
Your point is very well taken, and I would say that the older scientists here would probably, once upon a time, this sort of artifact would be something that they'd be thinking about. You know, they wouldn't rush to judgment on some benefit that they observed before they figured that kind of thing out. Once upon a time, you couldn't say publish a paper in crop science without 2 years of data and so on and so forth. So it seems like that it would be an artifact that should have been avoided.
Well,
and that's a harsher criticism.
Right. One of the things, my assignment for the data that we've just collected and processing, is to actually come up with a recommendation for Harvest Plus Rice Group about whether or not this maturity difference is actually a major issue. It's possible that what we'll see is that the physiological differences in the time during grain filling actually ends up being more important than the soil availability for most of the genotypes. We just don't know.
Any other questions for Sarah? We have other authors here too, so if there are any questions for the other authors.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I had a question for the presentation on seed quality. Thinking about the carotenoids, and you mentioned vitamin A, do you think it matters if it's in the endosperm versus the embryo, and would the changes that we're doing in our breeding work have any potential effect by altering for vitamins A in the endosperm on seed quality?
Endosperm is primarily dead tissue, so any changes in the endosperm, I don't expect that you're going to do big changes in seed quality. Now, any changes in the embryo, then, is a different story. But in vitamins, it should be beneficial most of the time, except when you're decreasing total carotenoids. I don't know what's going to happen then. When you're messing up the pathways, and then you get more beta-carotenoids, and you don't get total carotenoids start decreasing, then that will be something that I will be a little bit careful with. I mean, I will check it more often for seed quality. But in general, working with vitamins and seeds, because there are the antioxidants, and antioxidants are needed, you shouldn't be really doing anything detrimental by increasing them.
Any other questions?